From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is out this week. I'm Bob Garfield. In the course of the COVID-19 pandemic, we've seen all manner of messaging from political leaders. Perhaps none so telling as the declaration this week from British Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
You've put up with all the hardships of that program of social distancing because you understand that it's the only way to defeat the coronavirus, the most vicious threat this country has faced in my lifetime.
Well done, you lot. Your perseverance and sacrifice have saved our nation. Now, please stop persevering.
We said that you should work from home if you can and only go to work if you must. We now need to stress that anyone who can't work from home, for instance, those in construction or manufacturing, should be actively encouraged to go to work.
This is what you call a mixed message, which is what tends to happen when politicians are forced to make the stark choice between the public's immediate welfare and political ideology or the outlook for the next election. Here in the USA this week, a conservative majority Wisconsin Supreme Court, in overturning the Democratic governor's science-informed decision, privileged the right to roam freely over the right to not be fatally infected by a loved one or random stranger.
A major decision on stay-at-home orders that could reverberate nationwide. The Wisconsin Supreme Court overturning the state's mandate to stay at home as unenforceable under state law.
In the crossfire of such mixed messages and in a vacuum of reliable information, leadership, and trust, is it any wonder that the public turns to alternative sources of information? Across the world over the past roughly 2 weeks, millions of social media users have invested trust not in the authorities, but in the ravings of a discredited anti-vaxxer about broad conspiracies to sicken the world.
The game is to prevent the therapies till everyone is infected and push the vaccines, knowing that the flu vaccines increase the odds by 36% of getting COVID-19.
In an existential crisis, authority matters. And so this hour, we're considering the use and abuse of information at a moment in human history when survival depends on well-placed trust. It's about communication, not of a virus between one person and another, but of reliable information from those responsible for leading us out of catastrophe. We begin at the White House.
All throughout the country, the numbers are coming down rapidly.
Not true. In various hotspots around the country, infections and deaths are skyrocketing. And the administration knows that because they have data reflecting extreme spikes of infections in heartland states that are the heart, most of all, of Trump country. But as reported in a scoop from NBC News this week, those data were not made public nor even passed on to the authorities in the affected states and communities. Phil McCausland reports on rural issues and the social safety net for NBC News. He was one of the journalists who broke the hidden data story. Phil, welcome to OTM.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, what did the report identify?
The report identified quite a few locations across the country that are of concern. I think it's particularly notable because, you know, so much of the media has focused on the coasts where we've seen such incredible spikes in New York and California. But now we're beginning to see the growth of the virus in small towns in Minnesota, in Kansas City, in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we may not have seen such a huge outbreak prior to this.
Now, a few cases in a small area can create large percentage spikes.
Sure.
Going from one case to three is a 200% increase. What are we to make then of, let's say, Central City, Kentucky, where there was a 650% spike over a 7-day period?
In that particular instance, there's a prison there where there's been an incredible spike. You know, the White House press secretary pushed back against this document saying some of these locations are where prisons are where meatpacking plants are, and disregarded the data for that reason.
So I would just say that, and this was a quote, this is proof that the system is working, that we're able to identify what the president said are embers and put them out. It's the system at work.
But I think that's also disregarding the important presence that those places have. A prison is a huge employer in that area. And I mean, prisoners are people as well. They're getting sick. And then those correctional officers go home and spread the disease potentially to their families and to their communities. Meatpacking plants, we published a story today about one in Minnesota where there is a spike and it's slowly beginning to spread in the local community. So these are concerning, no matter if it's a meatpacking plant, a prison, or otherwise. All of these communities are beginning to become hotspots, and that is why I think the White House is keeping an eye on them.
Now, I'm no public health official, but if I were responsible for trying to contain the embers in my jurisdiction, I'd want all the available data to help me direct my resources and my restrictions where they are most urgent. The White House didn't make these data public to you, to the press. You had to dig them up. What about state and local officials? Have they also been left in the dark?
Yeah, I think numerous health officials have come out since the publication of this document who've said, hey, we were totally unaware and we've been blindsided by this data. I think a lot of people and medical workers say this too, who I've interviewed, say the feds in some ways have left us to fight a battle with a squirt gun. So as they continue to be left in the dark, I think you see a lot of local officials who are deeply frustrated and deeply frightened, especially as these communities begin to open up again.
On the face of it, Phil, it's outrageous that the White House would bury crucial information about hotspots, especially such alarming ones. But you say that it's pretty typical for the federal government to release such tracking data if and only if it chooses to, which also may mean if it's politically advantageous.
Yeah, I think we've seen elements of that. The Senate help hearing on Wednesday, for example, we saw a few Trump officials promote the elements of testing.
This may be hard to see, but if you look at the line on top, that's the total numbers of tests done by the United States. No other country in the world comes close to the total numbers. Again, as the president has said, today we will top over 9 million tests.
We see all kinds of different things to celebrate from the administration, but rarely do we see numbers or anything coming from them that might show a honest picture of how difficult this has been to contain. And I think that is maybe a troubling element for some state and local officials, that as this continues, the federal government is attempting to take a back seat, and rather than have some top-down leadership, they're very much leaving things to local officials and state officials to make decisions when they may not be equipped to be able to respond. For example, in Chattanooga, the mayor there is very much pushing against trying to reopen out of concern that there's not enough testing. He doesn't actually know the spread of the disease. But meanwhile, the Tennessee governor has pushed to reopen the state, and so his hands are tied to some degree. I've also done some reporting in Minnesota where we've seen a spike around the St. Cloud community. They've decided to reopen. They've sent a letter to the governor pushing him to reopen because they think their small businesses are going to collapse and die. And I think it comes down to that devil's bargain of what is the price of a human life.
Well, on the subject of politics, Central City is represented on the federal level by two of the most vocal politicians fighting to reopen the economy. Is there a way to connect the political leadership of Kentucky and the rush to open up the economy to these clusters, such as Central City, the 650% spike community?
In Kentucky, you do have two leaders there, Rand Paul and Senate Majority Leader
Mitch McConnell.
So, Madam President, our task in the weeks ahead will be to keep seeking thoughtful solutions that are not just for the very short term, but will help pivot toward a phased reopening.
Who are very public-facing within all this. And Rand Paul, especially as a doctor, I think people may look to him as an example. But seeing him during that HELP committee hearing not wearing a mask and pushing against Dr. Fauci's characterizations.
As much as I respect you, Dr. Fauci, I don't think you're the end all. I don't think you're the one person that gets to make a decision.
I think was pretty startling for a lot of folks. But overall, whether they're looking to them for how to act within the pandemic, I think they're probably looking to them more for the next coronavirus relief bill and what decisions they'll be making around that.
And I guess it can't help that just when the public needs the straight dope the most, local newspapers are dropping like flies.
Right now is when we depend on local journalism to dig into their own communities, to highlight these issues, to hold their local leaders accountable, to hold their governors and state legislatures accountable. What is really scary is we're going to see a media blackout in regions of the country where some of these hotspots might pick up, and we may not be able to note that pickup as quickly as we could if we had journalists on the ground asking questions, knowing their regions really well, knowing the leaders really well, and asking difficult questions.
Phil, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Phil McCausland reports on rural issues and social safety net for NBC News. Coming up, there's a playbook for leadership in a pandemic. Guess who hasn't cracked it? This is On the Media.